Hi everyone, welcome to the timingresearch.com crowd forecast news, episode number 218 for March 25th, 2019. If you have not had a chance to take a look at today's report yet, we're going to be talking about number 287. So you can go to timingresearch.com/reports to download this or any of the past reports there. You can find it in either web or PDF version, and you should be seeing it on your screen right now while I'm talking. We are broadcasting live on YouTube at 1 p.m. Eastern time, but you can also listen to the audio-only podcast version of all episodes now on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Podbean, or wherever else you listen to podcasts. Just search for Timing Research and subscribe. My name is David Kosmeter. I'm the creator of Timing Research, and I have Jim Kenny here to moderate today. So I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Jim.
Okay, great. Good to have everyone here today. I'm Jim Kenny, and we're going to go around the horn here and introduce ourselves briefly and then get into some of these questions and what's going on in this market. Starting off, it's going to be John Thomas. And John, do you want to give us a little background and things that you're up to and what's going on by you? Did you hear me, John?
Hey, John, are you there?
Okay, while John's getting squared away, why don't we find out about Bennett McDowell. And Bennett, can you come online here and just briefly introduce yourself and a little bit about yourself, and then we'll get into the questions.
Yeah, sure, Jim. Thanks. Thank you for having me today. David, thank you as well. It's great to be here. Always love doing these. They're kind of fun to see where the market's going to end up at the end of the week. I run TradersCoach.com. We started it officially back in 1998, so we've been doing this for quite some time. I was trading with some of the wirehouses before that time period. So I've been in trading a long time. We've come up with a suite of software tools that we use and develop. We also have a lot of educational material. So anybody that wants to learn more about trading, what we do, feel free to visit our website at TradersCoach.com. We also have a Facebook page that we are actively involved in, where we're going to release the weekly stock tips and things like that. So if you're interested in that, just go to Facebook, type in TradersCoach.com and like us, and you'll automatically get those tips as well. So that's pretty much it. We do a lot of active trading now. I do TradeStation morning market briefs every Wednesday. I do a lot of webinars during the week as well as trading the markets. And, basically we just have a blast doing what we do.
Okay. Sounds great, Bennett. Is John up and running, or is he still having some technical stuff going on? John, are you there? Hi, John. John Thomas.
Okay, I think he can't hear us for some reason.
All right, for some reason it's happening. Let's continue on here. Again, I'm Jim Kenny, and I'm the content provider at optionprofessor.com. John, can you hear me now? Nope, doesn't look like it. Okay, so moving forward, again, I have a weekly update that I do on the internet, and at the end of the broadcast, I'll explain how you could participate in that. But let's get into your questions of the week here and see what people are thinking here. The first one is, we're just looking for a little bit of a comment on your opinion here. Which direction do you think that the S&P, Bennett, will be moving from this Monday's open to Friday's close, basically the 25th through the 29th? What do you see here? What are you thinking?
Okay, well, basically what I think is going to happen is we're going to see a little bullishness in the S&P in the beginning of the week and the Dow. It should give way, according to the analysis that we use, towards the end of the week to the downside. So I'm going with about a 75 to 80% probability ending lower for the week after some bullishness in the beginning of the week. I don't think it's going to end a lot lower, but it depends on how much more higher it gets in the beginning of the week. But I do think it will end lower by Friday.
Okay, that's good. I just wanted to give my idea here on this question, where it'll be. Again, we're both
doing
our best guess.
Yeah, I can't hear the host.
Okay, John, can you hear? Okay, I'll come back to him in a second.
Yeah, I don't think he can hear you. Maybe type in the message.
I can't hear. Okay.
Jim.
Yeah, well, I can't hear David or whoever's asking the questions.
Yeah, his speakers are off or something.
I got you. Maybe you could call him on the phone and tell him that while we continue on. What do you think?
I've tried that.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll see what I can do.
Okay, well, just keeping the flow here, which is obviously a little bumpy right now. But Bennett, I want to give you my two cents here. Hey, listen, I think that the markets right now obviously have been hit, but the things that I've been looking at are not, it's not surprising me. So basically, the Russell and the transport, you know, they indicated a rollover was coming here just a bit ago before this, preceded the drop of Friday. And the inverted moving averages, meaning the 50 and the 200 day are still under, you know, in a bad cross. So this rally here had been fast and furious and very robust, you know, Q1 bingo, you know, a January effect, you name it, right? So again, between now and the end of the week, I think we're going to be going lower. Now, what would possibly cause a bounce here would be the Russell stopping here at that 1500 area and the transport stopping at 10,000. If they both stop here and rally, you might get a little bit of a bounce in the S&P by the end of the week. So my confidence level is about 55% because I think it's more probable than not that we could see some selling by the end of the week. All right. So that's basically, and the way the crowd was, obviously it's pretty heavy on the downside. So sentiment's pretty negative here. Lower was 71% in the survey. So obviously that's a pretty heavy to the downside. So, could it bounce from here? Obviously, but Bennett and I are both thinking that by the end of the week, the reality of some of the other deterioration is going to hit and maybe we'll fade off a little bit. John, are you with us? All right. John's there, but he can't.
John, can you hear me? John.
All right. Well, let's go over to Bennett. You want to go to question two and then we can catch up to John once he gets over the technical difficulties. What do you think about that?
Yeah, absolutely. Just fire away.
All right. So question number two is rate your confidence to question two by estimating the probability you have correctly. Okay, we already kind of went over that. Now, what is, let's see here. Hold on one moment.
Well, why don't I tell you, I probably the next question is to tell you why.
yeah, sure. Why not?
Okay. We kind of combine questions one and two. I'm going to show my screen because I'll show you some charts I'm looking at and talk a little bit about that. And then hopefully, John will come on eventually here. Okay. So let's see what we got here. I guess I'll do it that way. All right. Can you see my chart?
Absolutely.
Okay, great. All right. So now this is the Dow, okay? But I also have the S&P, but I wanted to show the Dow because I have it marked with the type of correction that I think we're in. I do a lot of Elliott Wave in addition to using software tools that we created here at traderscoach.com. So what we've seen here, I'm just going to walk you through really quickly. In Elliott Wave, basically trends move in five waves. And after the wave, you go into a correction or another trend to the downside. And so this is a 60-minute chart on the Dow Jones Industrial Average. So it's a pretty short-term chart. The reason why I'm showing this is because we're looking at a short-term forecast for Friday, not a long-term. Right. And so we think we ended a five here back in this direction. And since then, and that's been really since October of 2018, the market's been messy. All right. Yeah, we had a nice move up here, but we haven't broken out of its previous high in 2018. So this really is what we call a classic triple flat complex Elliott Wave correction. And the triple flat means that there are three A's, three B's, and three C waves. And we can see two here. We have two here, two here. And we have another A that we think has completed, and we're in B. So that's why we're seeing this bullishness right now. And one of the other indicators we look at is the PTF. And this PTF has a 75% probability of being accurate. And when it's green, you find the highest price in that green area, which was this price here. So actually, this is why I'm saying I think we're going to go up in the midweek period to satisfy that PTF, make a new high. But I do think B wave will complete. And after B wave, then will be C wave and will come down something like that. So that's why I'm saying, based on the kind of analysis that we do, that I see towards the end of the week, all right, a more selling environment than a buying. But like what you said, I think we got some bullishness to get through during the week. So the wild card is, you know, how strong is the bullishness going to last? Is it going to last till Thursday? Is it going to last just till Tuesday or Wednesday? Hard to really tell, but I do think we'll get some bullishness back before the end of the week, but that should give way to selling. So that's why I come up with a forecast of selling towards the end of the week.
Right. Quick question, Bennett, on the Elliott Wave. Some of the guys that I listened to on the Elliott Wave, you know, when we were down low in the 23, 2400, whatever it was, they thought that the rally could go up towards 2800, but then they raised their Elliott Wave forecast towards testing the highs. Do you think with things like the transports and the Russell breaking their 200-day averages again, that the test of the high in the short term is off the table, or do you think possibly testing the high of 2940 could still be on the table?
Well, we really don't look at technical analysis the same way you do.
Right.
What we kind of do is more plot out what the Elliott Wave is doing and what the indicators are doing. This happens to be a daily chart of the Dow. And the resistance level that we're watching, which represents the old high back in 2018, is 26,951.81. Right. But as you can see, we have a red PTF down here. So we think that eventually we're going to get actually down here before going above the high here. So I'm actually looking for a low of 20,455 to 16,309 before we're out of this correction.
And but you don't have a correlation on the S&P because you're focused on the Dow right now.
Well, right. But the S&P will follow closely.
Oh yeah, no, there's a relationship there, no doubt.
You know.
okay. So basically, that's a little bit of a short-term look at the Elliott wave structure and some of the things you're looking at, which are great. Again, I've been watching just a couple of points that I've been watching. You know, obviously the Treasury bond getting under 260 on the 10-year was a big move down, and then of course the inversion that we saw, and then of course Bunds going negative last week. You know, these were all things that were troubling to the market as well. And again, on a short-term basis, the thing that had me troubled on the rally is because I like to use moving averages to get a little idea of the flow of traffic. And we got so far underneath the moving averages at 2350, moving back towards them at 2750 was pretty good shot, you know. And then we went through that and went up to 2860. I thought it might take a run at those highs, but it seems to have failed right now. So basically, with a sloppy moving average picture, my historical feeling on that is that a pullback or the consolidation we're seeing is really the most probable outcome, because I think the market is so in flux with the moving averages that, this short-term rise being so fast, so rapid, obviously lends to, a little bit of profit taking and that kind of thing. So I think a slant to sideways or lower here makes an awful lot of sense. And as we saw with things like Boeing, you don't know when news is going to come out of the blue. But when you have stocks that are 20, 30 or 40% above its 200-day average, you know, the trees don't grow to the sky and you have to start looking or thinking about protecting some of that money. And in the option front, obviously, married puts and collars are a couple of ways to try to protect some of that equity from time to time. Okay. Is there any other stocks or any other things that you're looking at here, fundamental or technical, that might be worthwhile talking about? Like, let's look at question number four. Okay. We went over a little bit of the idea on the hedging tactics. Do you have any other, additions, Bennett, on hedging?
Yeah. Let me just show you a quick chart of the S&P E-mini, since you were asking me about that.
Sure.
Here's the 60-minute chart on that. And this was for Elliott Wave, this was a 3. This is the wave 4 fib retracement for the target range. So we think it's going to get up there. You know, everything's probabilities. Nobody knows for certain. But there's a 70% chance that these wave 4s end in between these two blue lines. And that would be 2818 to 2835. This is the E-mini, by the way. And so that could happen pretty quickly. That could happen by Wednesday. And then we head back down to complete the downtrend on a wave 5 down here. So, again, this kind of supports the lower S&P forecast for the end of the week. So I just want to kind of to show that.
Good question might be, what would be the probable, or shall we say the hypothetical forecast on where that drop might end? Did you say 2691?
It's going to depend on let me just write this down here. So this is a 3. It's going to depend on where wave 4 ends in the target zone. But hypothetically, we can take over a fib extension here. And let me see if, let me grab that. Okay, I got it. All right. So if we say connect the dots here, anchor it, let's just run it up to the 50% mark.
Right.
All right. Then we come down to a low in that target range here between the two blue lines below. And that's roughly 2782 to 2755. So in this area here. So the idea here is it would get up here, wherever it ends here, and then head back down here to complete the sequence.
Hey, I'm back. It's John Thomas. Can you hear me?
Yeah, John, are you there?
Yeah. What happened? A Mueller report came out or something like that?
Well, do you want to play catch up here real quick? What do you think the market's going to do between now and the end of the week?
Go up. I think that the Fed action last week was so momentous that it's basically put a floor under the market that's fairly close. We think that, maybe we sort of chop around here for a couple of days and then make another move back up above 180. 80 by Friday. Our general scenario is the dreaded flat line of death. You know, the market can't go down, it can't go up either. So we could be stuck here for a few weeks.
Yeah, I was saying that the technical picture with the moving averages, with the 50 still underneath the 200 on many things, you know, is kind of a situation where probabilities that we could chop around till those averages flatten out and then turn back up, you know, could also, you know, be happening just a little bit as well. Because we had a very
big move. Exactly what we see here, you know, chop new highs, and then we roll over and die, you know, somewhere in the spring or early summer and go back and test the December lows. It's tough to rise. You can't rise very far or fast with falling earnings.
No. And the valuations have to have some reason behind it, not just the fact that people want prices to go up all the time.
Yeah, and other than being the world's most expensive stocks now.
Right. But one other thing I was going to ask you, you know, that I've watched, and I was wondering if you saw anything there, is that I watched the Russell and the Transports, and they've gone through their 200-day average like a knife through butter. They're holding on to some support down here. Now, if we don't, can you see us taking out the 200-day average on the S&P in the 2760 area, or do you think the market may not go that far?
You know, the way the market trades these days, I say we go down to 26, break it, suck in all the shorts, and run it right back up again.
Yeah.
As far as the Russell 2000, we're actually running a pretty big short there right now. We've had it on for about a week, and our belief that is in weak markets and weak economies, small stocks do much worse than larger stocks. They actually fall at 1.5 times the rate of the S&P 500 stocks. So we're running a short there and keeping that as a hedge against all of our long stocks and technology.
It didn't look like the Russell liked the 1600 level very much, that's for sure.
Oh, the Russell's in a clear downtrend now, and it may lead the main market in that respect.
That would be my concern. Yeah, that would be my concern. We were talking about hedging a little bit. Bennett, did you give any input onto any ideas that you have on hedging, or are you, you know, that's not really your cup of tea?
Well, we use options to hedge. I think that's, you know, pretty standard in the industry on our longer term positions. In terms of our momentum trades, we pretty much just really use really strict risk control. We're right. Our win to loss ratio is about 65%. So we're winning, losing 3 or 4 times out of every 10 trades. But we keep that loss at 2% of our account size. And by doing so and letting the winners run, it produces a payoff ratio of about 2.5 to 1. So we're pretty successful, even though, you know, we don't always win. And it's risk control that makes the difference for us. But on long-term portfolios, sure. We use options to hedge quite a bit sometimes on that. Depends what the market cycle's in.
Yeah, on hedging, we're running a neutral portfolio right now. Every long has a short.
Right.
Every long may be short calls against it. And again, that sets up with the flat line of death scenario for at least through the April expiration. So, you know, we'll be long Boeing, but we're short Tesla against it. We're long Freeport-McMoRan, but, you know, we're short the Russell 2000 against it, and so on and so on and so on. So we actually have a fairly aggressive, large portfolio now, but fully hedged. And, you know, occasionally your shorts go down and your longs go up and everything is glorious.
Right. Now, with regards to emerging situations, I thought I might just mention that in case you guys had any input on things that maybe aren't in the headlines right now, but they may be in the headlines as the year unfolds. Bennett, did you have anything there that you, well, let's go in the order of we had originally. John, do you have anything there, you know, something that's not really big on the radar now, but it could be by the end of the year?
Since earnings are now at negative numbers and falling, the next big surprise is that earnings go back up again. Mm-hmm. You know, the world is kind of bracing for a disastrous Q1 GDP figure on April 23rd. Mm-hmm. Once we get that behind us, earnings could go back up again, depending on the state of the global economy. So that would be one big surprise. And that, by the way, would take the market to new highs.
Right.
And the other big surprise is that interest rates go to zero.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with the Fed now in easing mode, and every central bank in the world is also easing at the same time.
Right.
U.S. interest rates could be on a path of going to zero in a year or two.
Right.
And if that's the case, you just throw away all your interest rate plays, like the banks, and get ready for a deflationary interest rate world.
Right. Bennett, did you have anything on that? Something that might be coming up a little bit down the road that we're not seeing right now?
Jim, I have a hard enough time keeping up with what's going to happen next week.
That's right.
I'm not that smart. Things happen so fast and so quick. It's hard to keep track of it all. I'm basically a momentum trend trader. So I just follow the trend and I try not to get into the underlying reasons all the time why a trend is doing what it is. All I know is if it's trending, I want to be there.
Right. Yeah. It's got to be your Navy background. You know, once a ship starts going a direction, it's really hard to change that direction in a hurry.
I think that was a hit. I'm not sure.
And the vehicle you mostly use, Bennett, would be the S&P Mini, or would it be the Dow, or individual stocks, or what do you think?
Well, yeah, we trade future stocks, day trade primarily the S&P E-mini, the NASDAQ 100, and actually the gold E-minis are good too. Anything where there's good liquidity on the E-mini for good fills is fine for intraday trading. In terms of momentum trading stocks, I have some scanners that I developed that we scan for different markets. We do not trade Forex, but we do trade futures. I got a lot of clients that do trade Forex using our software tools, but I primarily stick to futures and stocks.
Right. And with regards to the gold, since you mentioned that, just follow up question. What's the vibe you have in the gold market right now?
Well, they trade the 2-minute time frame on gold. So we're just basically trading intraday trends. I haven't taken a long-term position on gold, but we certainly could look it up. Let me just share my screen here. And let's just go ahead and type in here the GLD contract. We'll keep it simple and take a look at that. And one thing I can tell you right now is the weekly chart, even though it's been kind of bullish recently, the weekly chart is indicating a red PTF here. And again, this has a 75% accuracy rate. So the long-term trend on gold is actually going to come down. But as you can
hit the share, Bennett, can you hit the share button? Because I can't see your screen. Yeah.
Got it.
And then could you repeat what you just said?
Sure. Okay. So here's three charts on gold, and I've just got the ETF for GLD. On this here, the daily chart, which is the one in the center, is showing a bullish move, and that's representing the weekly chart's move up in this direction here. But we have a red PTF on the far right. This red PTF here has a 75% accuracy rate. It's really easy to use. Basically, you find the lowest price in that red area, which would have been this area here, and there's a 75% accuracy that it's going to come down, and that is not the final low. So after this move to the upside, and it really hasn't broken out, it's, you know, pretty much range bound here on the long-term part, then it should break to the downside. So I would not be a buyer of gold long-term, but we certainly enjoy trading not only the intraday time frames, but you could have also traded the daily chart to the long side as well.
If you broke above 24, 25 on GLD, then you'd maybe change your tune on it a little bit.
Yep, but so far that hasn't happened.
That hadn't happened. So, you know, you got to work with the cards that are in your hand. John, did you have any feeling on the outlook of gold? Maybe he's got something there.
You know, we've been buying the dips and selling the rallies. You know, we think people like gold as a hedge to their risk portfolios, whatever they may be, stocks or whatever. So we think gold has entered a major long-term bull market, a very slow bull market. You know, it was only up 10% last year. I think it hit bottom in 2016 and is going to its old high of 1927. So, not only do you have hedging demand from hedge funds, hedging portfolios, but you have every central bank in the world now loading up on gold because they distrust American monetary
policy
and economic policies, which they see as deflating the dollar.
Right. And again, my view on this is that the Trump administration has come out in no uncertain terms that they'd like to see a lower dollar. And they are definitely interested in easy money and putting this Stephen Moore in there, who by definition is, an economic commentator and a writer. And now he's going to be on the Federal Reserve Board. That's an interesting setup.
Well, the great thing about Stephen Moore is that he's 100% predictable.
Yeah.
you always know what he's going to do. He's going to want to raise interest rates during Democratic administrations
right.
and lower rates during Republican ones. So that is, you know, right. when he gets to vote, that'll be a vote for an easing, basically for 2 years.
Right.
Now you can take that to the bank.
Yeah. So, you know, under that scenario, and I know, Bennett, this is a little bit outside your wheelhouse from the standpoint of what your business is, which is short-term trading and follow the money on a day-to-day basis. So we're off a little bit there. But I just wanted to throw in that, you know, if you have a situation where the president wants to see the stock market rise, he wants real estate to have low cost of money, he wants to see everyone borrow money at a very low rate, and, you know, he is definitely connected towards the stock market, you know, going up constantly, and he has no concern about the deficit, apparently, because we're blowing the deficit off the top now. So I think in that environment, you know, if the dollar were to break 94 and go into a significant correction, that may change the scenario for gold much more to the upside, if in fact...
Yeah, Trump is the most pro-gold president since Nixon.
Absolutely.
Who moved the U.S. off the gold standard. And I'm surprised he hasn't been tweeting about gold yet, although he will once somebody points it out to him. But, you know, he's also said the United States should default on its debt and renegotiate with its lenders and get a discount on the national debt. That is a huge argument to go run and buy gold and any other non-U.S. asset.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing that gets you paranoid. And this is, again, a sidebar on the Treasury market, is that if there was anyone in office that would say, hey, listen, let's look at this debt, let's go to the people who borrowed the money, and let's discuss the idea that they get
and offer them half.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he already had that kind of a situation. I mean,
or won't pay at all.
Exactly. So the bottom line is now, that is a realistic or unrealistic thing? I don't know. But I do know one thing. I won't be catching any mosquitoes with my mouth open if that ever happens, because there is a history.
And also, that's a very big argument to buy Bitcoin. And if you look at Bitcoin demand these days, it's almost all coming from Venezuela, where they have entered Weimar Republic levels of inflation.
Right.
Venezuela is the only country in the world where Bitcoin is appreciated. It's up on a year.
Right. So, Bennett, getting you back in the picture here, as far as any other market besides the E-mini and the other that you kind of see something happening with the short-term trading with regards to?
We actually like right now General Electric for a little while. It's not a buy and hold. But
you have a chart you go on?
It looks like it's pulling up. Yeah, let me put my chart up there. Give me 1 second. Yeah.
You're a handsome man, but a lot of people like to see the charts. You know?
Yeah, I'm sure they do. I don't blame them. Give me 1 second. Let me just move everything over here a little bit. All right. So here's GE and the weekly charts on the right. So this basically, in terms of the wave count, 3 here. We think a 4 high probability range here. And then eventually coming back down. Notice the PTF is red on GE. So this low here, in terms of probability, is not the final low according to that indicator. So we do think there's an opportunity for a buy on GE to the target zone, but it's not a buy and hold. This is just a temporary situation. So it's a momentum trade into the Fibonacci retracement area. And so around $15.77 up to $21.64 is our target range. And we're sitting at around $9.92. Now, it's going to take a little while to get up there. It's not going to happen tomorrow. But I think if you go into that position now and put your stop right under the bottom here, you should be in pretty good shape.
I got you. Hey, John, you probably follow GE. Do you have any input on
GE? I wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole here. I see a head and shoulders setting up. The fundamental turnaround of this company is years off. They're still finding dead bodies, you know, inside the corporate headquarters. And, you know, if this were 2008 and we had a chart like this on GE, I'd say, yeah, go ahead. We're getting close to a bottom. But to get this formation at a market top at the end of a 10-year bull market, no thank you.
We agree to disagree. Makes a market, okay?
No, hey, listen, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
You know, anybody that talks in absolutes, okay, to my knowledge, is just setting themselves up for failure. It's all about probabilities. And we're not saying this is a buy and hold at all.
Yeah.
We're saying this is a temporary buy. And that's it.
Yeah.
Okay?
Well, the good news is the market's above its 50-day moving average. So that's not a bad thing. And again, they've made moves. moves, you know, again, you know, when Bennett's looking at things, he's looking at the prices and he's looking at the momentum, and he could care less about who the CEO is and where he went to lunch, because that's the type of trading where you're looking at the momentum of the current price. And that's pretty much right on, right, Bennett? You know,
Hey, Bennett, you're muted.
You're muted, Bennett.
Yeah, only lip readers can, I think, can follow I think us right
giving,
now.
I think he's giving John Thomas an earful.
Yeah. They keep him muted then.
And he's getting animated.
Hey, Bennett.
Yeah. I think he's pissed.
Yeah. But anyway, so let's move forward. I'll just want to throw in my two cents on the GE. GE obviously has gotten whacked in the last year or so. It's gone from 30 down to about, what, 8? Or actually 6. So, yeah. Again, it's been sold out. Now, they made a couple of moves. They sold off a lot of stuff, and they fixed their balance sheet up a little bit. But again, now they've got to earn money, and they've been losing money. The other thing is that the moving averages on the stock are 950 and 1050, and we're trading right in the middle. So, again, this is a tough neighborhood between here in 1050, and could it roll over again to the downside? Like John was saying, if the whole board does, I don't think this will be the one-eyed man in the Valley of the Blind. So if the board goes over, I think that could be problematic for GE. John, Bennett is on thing? Okay. John, what other individual stocks are you following, you know, that might be of interest to people out there or sector?
Well, for example, we just put out a short on Tesla this morning on news that the car registrations with the states are just falling off a cliff.
Right.
And that's a temporary thing. You know, long term, we think Tesla goes up 10 times from here, but the next $30 move is probably to the downside, where and breaking 2-year support will probably suck in a lot of sellers. So on a 3-week view, Tesla's a short. On the long side, we're long Boeing. We think that the next surprise with Boeing is that they allowed a plane to fly again.
Right.
I'm a pilot. It obviously was a circuit breaker problem. You know, if the pilots knew enough to pull the damn circuit breaker, the planes never would have crashed. And yeah, right. Granted, you're allowed 10 seconds to figure that out, but every right. pilot knows this. So I think that once the software goes through its beta testing, these planes will be back up in the air again. And the next move in Boeing is going to be up $50 at least. It'll go back to its old highs. Still an incredible company. So,
you're right.
Long Boeing, short Tesla. Those are two names good for the next options expiration, essentially.
Right. On the Boeing story, you know, it was up at around 440. It was about 25% or 20% above its 200-day average. Now, you don't know there's going to be crashes, but you know something may occur to pull it back because it's very overbought then. But then during that drop, you should see that you saw the volume. Every Tom, Dick, and Harry got out of there, the volume was enormous. So it had a huge high volume sell-off, but you never took out the 350 area where that 200-day moving average was. And then obviously now it seems to be getting some constructive. These guys have got great order flow and they're in pretty much a two-man game, right? So obviously they have very good visibility looking forward, as we know today. And so
they have the largest order backlog in the world for any product. They have a backlog of 1,000 planes or 10 years worth of work.
Right.
By the way, after watching this for 50 years, I can tell you that when things get 25% above their 50-day moving average and ridiculously overbought, accidents tend to happen. It's like magic.
Right. And that volume on the sell-off happened. Yeah, and that volume on the sell-off, I mean, was just enormous.
Oh, it's huge.
Yeah. So, and then that's obviously those people are all gone now, you know. And so basically, and when that kind of volume happens, what I always say to myself, who's on the other side? In other words, what is a dumb guy buying all this stock during the drop? And when he drops the bid that much and he's taking in all that volume, do you think it's some moron doing that? So the bottom line is, you know, when the volume gets that high, they drop the bid that much and the company's that kind of company, you got to at least sniff around the buy side and maybe use the 200-day moving average as a line in the sand and see if you get a bounce.
Yeah, I'll tell you a funny story. Just take 30 seconds. I was at Incline Village, Nevada, a couple of weeks ago, looking at a $5 million house, a beautiful house, great lake view. And I asked the agent, what is the owner doing? He said, they're day trader. So I went over to their office, looked at their computer, and what do you see up on the screen? A chart of Boeing. And they completely made this living just trading Boeing.
Yeah, that gives you an idea of the kind of wealth if you're a long-term holder of that thing.
Well, and how much hot money the stock had sucked in.
Exactly. Bennett around?
Yeah, I'm here. Go ahead.
Okay, great. Yeah, I just was going to ask you, you know, because sometimes during the broadcast here, during the shows, people ask about what type of technical and fundamental things that they're looking at that might affect the market in a substantial way in the next week or so. Now, you're pretty much not looking at too much of the fundamental side. So you like Fed meetings or what CPI comes out with. That is that in your mix or is it not in your mix?
Not really. We're pretty much from a technical analysis standpoint in that we believe everything that's represented out there is in the price already. So we pretty much follow price action.
Right. And as news reports hit, obviously that weren't in the price action, the prices change and then bingo, you want to switch your position.
Or we get stopped out if it's against it.
Yeah. And sometimes if you get stopped out, do you reverse or do you generally go to the sideline if you get stopped out?
It depends on the setup. Everyone's a little bit different. If we get an entry to the short side based on the tools that we use, we'll take it. Otherwise, we may just get stopped out and stay out flat for a while.
Now, you have got some type of proprietary software or some type of software that you're using to kind of crunch all the numbers and crunch all the situations and put it into some kind of a hypothetical or forecasting type thing, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. We work off probabilities. There's no guarantees in the market. And like I was saying before, I think anybody that talks in absolutes is kind of a fool when they're trading the markets because, you know, it's a game of probabilities and risk control.
Exactly.
And that's what we've learned over doing this 25 years. And the software tools that we use gives us a matrix of that probability, and then we go with it.
I don't know if this is stepping over the line or not, but can you give us a little bit of an idea of some of the ingredients into the soup that the software is all about?
Well, what we do is we take a look at price patterns, and then we also take a look at the momentum that went into those price patterns. Mm-hmm. And what we're looking at is there's a classic definition for a trend trade called a 1-2-3 pattern. And basically, it's higher highs and higher lows. So we look for that pattern, but it has to have the proper momentum with it. And then we use other tools in addition to that to confirm that particular type of setup. So it's price pattern, but we're also looking at the underlying momentum for support or confirmation of that particular price pattern.
Yeah, that 1-2-3 formation has a reasonably decent probability to it, doesn't it?
Yeah, we try to keep it simple. You know, it doesn't always work, but it works more often than it doesn't. Right. And so what we try to do is pretty much stick with our rule base. And if we do that, we do pretty well. And, you know, try not to get emotional or swayed by news or anything like that. So if we do that, we're in pretty good shape.
Yeah.
By the way, Bennett, the main complaint about this show is that we agree too much. So the more disagreement, the better, as long as you don't cast aspersions on the U.S. Marine Corps.
Oh, no, I have a lot of friends, but you're casting aspersions on the United States Navy.
That's my job.
Well,
that's
my
that's
job
why we're here.
He could drive up the freeway there up to Pendleton, pick up the Marines and come over and get you. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Well, I've actually got quite a few Marine friends here in San Diego. So I like the Marines.
So, yeah, that's, you know, obviously there's many ways to skin the cat, right? And sometimes you're using, you know, longs against shorts, where John's very much working with things along those lines. Bennett has got software that's trying to use different chart formations and patterns and momentum to try to figure out on a shorter term basis how to play the swings. And, you know, what I like to do is I like to use options as a defensive tool to kind of, you know, take positions, but kind of put parameters on the risk. And I find when you do that, it's a little bit easier mentally for some people. If they bought a stock and bought a put, now they know their stops in there at the put side until it expires. And then they can, you know, not have to make another decision on that for a while. So the options that, you know, can be used as a very much of a defensive measure and a way for you to get peace at night, knowing that you've got parameters around your position. It's not a panacea, but for me, I think it's not a bad thing to have in your tool chest. That's for sure.
Yeah, I think the key is that we all find our own unique style and go with that and test it, make sure it works, and then use risk control.
Yeah. And again, the moving averages I've always found to be helpful because they're based on price and time. They're not based on opinion or innuendo. You can't argue with price and time. They are what they are. Again, not a panacea, but gives you a little bit of an idea. And you know, like I say, right now Tesla looks very, very weak. And but it is, you know, at 261. Or what do you have Tesla at right now, John?
Let's see. Right now I have it at, we sold it just this morning at 262. Yeah. And we're at 260.19. And I think you could get down to about 230 easy, especially if this break of support holds. So,
right.
But yeah, but it could, you know, Elon Musk could make a tweet and it could roar back up just as easily. So,
well, I see what
we are actually long the 320-300 put spread that expires on April 18th. That's so the safe way to do that. And you should make about 14% profit in 14 trading days on that trade.
And I'm not following Tesla that hard, but just looking at the raw numbers, you know, if we went down to that 230 level, we'd be about 27% under the 200-day average. And that would definitely be the zone where I would start looking at the other side. Right now, we're at about 17% under the 200-day average, which is not excessively overdone. But and it does have short interest, obviously, because there's a lot of people, obviously, on all sides of this story.
Well, this is the largest short interest company in the entire stock market. It's always in the top five.
Yeah.
However, I went to charge at the factory last week.
Yep.
They have a charger now that charges at the rate of 1,000 miles an hour, which means you can get a full top up on a 300-mile range battery in 15 minutes. It really is unbelievable.
So Apple was supposed to have some things going on. Bennett, do you have anything on Apple on a short-term basis that you're seeing interesting? Because it did go up to that 192 and it has rolled over a bit. Are you getting anything on Apple?
Give me a second. Let me bring the charts up.
Yeah, Apple's supposed to be announcing their new streaming service in another hour or so, and that's what's been driving the stock for the last 2 weeks.
Right, and the guy was on CNBC who kind of follows it. They call him one of the best guys who follow it, whatever that means. But he did make some points that they're trying to get into a game here, that there's already players, and they're already well-established, and they're players that have already spent a ton of money on it. So I think maybe the people got a little bit thinking that just getting into this thing is not an overnight success. It might be good longer term, but in the short run, not so much. And this 200 number, you know, it has come up to really where the market dropped from. So there was some technical, in my view, there was some technical resistance there right around the 200 number. So that's probably in a short-term basis, not a bad place to defend if you were going to be sideways to negative on this thing. A break above that 200 would, you know, would be much better.
When the world's largest company wants to move into an area, you do not take it lightly.
No. And the thing, though, is that, you know, again, they're not in a party of one in that industry. And that's what I think the thing is. I always think it came back to when they announced that they weren't going to be following the iPhone sales, which is, what, 60% of their revenue. And a lot of people are thinking their phones are a little bit expensive, and there's discounting, and there's inventory. So there's a lot of stuff going on. There's no question about it. And it's not all good. So, and when
Tesla is falling apart here. So if you want to get a short off, you better do it pretty soon.
Yeah, it looks like I said, at 17%, it's not that oversold. When you go down to 230 and you're 26% under the 200-day average, I wouldn't want too much part of that. Unless there's a story behind it, like, you know, that, you know, they opened up the books and everything's not square or something crazy like that. But yeah, I think the momentum obviously is to the downside. You don't go 17% underneath the 200-day because it's been going up, right? So you got good momentum there. Bennett, we're back with you. You got anything on Apple?
Nope. Yep. Hold on 1 second. Let me just
bring the chart up here.
Well, I think you all said it. I mean, it's in a bullish move right now after a nice move to the downside back late last year. So, you know, green PTF, green momentum on everything we're looking at. So it looks like higher highs to come.
Yeah. How about since you got your machine running right now, right?
Yep.
Okay. Why don't you throw up JP Morgan?
You had a second to load.
I shouldn't have used the word throw up because people who own it may be feeling that way with the price coming down lately. You like that one, John? Throw up. All right. So anyway, as he's trying to get that, John, a quick point on a bank like JP Morgan. What are you thinking?
Yeah. Don't touch them with a 10-foot pole. They couldn't go up last year when interest rates were going up. So they're certainly not going to go up now when interest rates are going down. And our whole theory is that fintech is eating their lunch. So we're long things like Square, PayPal, and Visa. And we think the legacy banks are a a disaster waiting to happen. You know, they all have these gigantic 1,000-branch networks, which cost a fortune, and they're going to have to get rid of all of those before they have a chance of making real money again.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen a lot of branches, and they don't seem to be exactly bursting with activity. And, you know, there's got to be an expense to have them. Plus, this is a mammoth company. You know, every Tom, Dick, and Harry who's in the stock market in any index fund or whatever, you know, they're in this thing. $326 billion market cap. If they were to suggest that the party's over on this thing, there's more than a couple of people who want to get out of the house.
Well, and they've just been horrible performers. Goldman Sachs is another one we follow. And, it's a legacy business model. They can't change fast enough to keep up with a modern online economy. And regulation is a giant headache there. You know, they said they deregulated recently. This is the most regulated industry in the world still.
You know, the other thing is, you know, Buffett's big hold used to be IBM, and they kind of got caught as a little bit of a dinosaur, haven't they? And then Wells Fargo is a big one now for him as well. Is it possible that Wells Fargo will be the IBM to Buffett in the years to come?
I think in the case of Wells Fargo, you know, Buffett is a cash flow guy. And as long as they generate cash flow, he'll be fine with that.
But I'm saying
Buffett also is willing to hold something for 10 years. And I'm not sure many of the listeners of this program are 10-year investors in anything.
Right. Hey, Bennett, do you have the Apple up there?
Yeah, I got it up right. I have JP Morgan. Didn't you want to see that one?
I mean, I'm sorry. Yeah. No, I strike that. I got confused. Yeah, JP.
Oh, okay. What do you got for JP? Yeah, it looks like it's heading right down.
Below
90 pretty soon, I'd say.
Yeah, it looks awful.
Yeah.
No, the reason I mentioned JP Morgan. The reason I mentioned JP Morgan is obviously a lot of people are in the financials, or they were hearing about buy the financials. I mean, if I had a dime for every time I heard buy the financials in the last 18 months. I'd be buying John Thomas's Tesla from him tonight. But there's a tremendous amount of people in this financial sector, and people just refuse to say uncle on this thing. And I just wanted the people who are listening to get a little bit of a vibe on what the lead dog in the financial looks like. You know, one last thing before we close out, let's go over the oil situation. Is there any oil stock, John, that you are looking like? How about Anadarko? Is anything going on there?
You know, we like Anadarko. Our pick in the area is Chevron, the California oil company. We think oil's on its way to 70 or 75. OPEC now has new discipline. Russia and Saudi Arabia are both restricting oil supplies at the same time. Venezuela is collapsing. China is increasing demand. So everything is working for oil right now, at least to higher oil prices and higher oil stocks. The only ones I'd really avoid are the offshore drillers like Transocean, because they can't compete with U.S. fracking on a cost basis. You know, you're looking at $100 a barrel offshore versus, $30, $30 to $40 a barrel onshore in the U.S. So that's your next legacy industry, are these large offshore platforms. So we're positive oil. We're positive on commodities generally, which includes copper and oil. If China is the only economy in the world that's stimulating itself, you want to buy whatever China buys, and that's copper and oil.
That's right. Hey, Bennett, can you throw Chevron up there? Because on a short-term basis, it looked like it might be rolling over a little bit. Obviously, on a longer-term basis, the trends are pretty much looking up. But Bennett, do you have Chevron?
CVX is the symbol.
Yeah. Bennett, are you with us?
By the way, another reason to play oil, it's a weak dollar play.
Yeah.
You know, if you think the U.S. dollar is going to hell in a handbasket, you want to buy oil, copper, silver, palladium, all that stuff.
Yeah. Hey, Bennett, did you hear me?
Hey, Bennett, you're muted again, if you can.
No, I got you.
Okay. And if you can throw Chevron up there, give people a little bit of a look at the lead dog in the oil area, or one of the lead dogs in the oil area. And on a short-term basis, like I said,
I'll pick that up.
Okay, great. And then we'll close out the program after that. John, any other sectors, materials, anything going on in any, let's talk about a sector that people could look at.
I think that as long as the momentum in the stock market is up, you want to be with technology. Technology will lead to the upside. upside, and then it'll lead to the downside after that. So as long as the market is good, you have to be long all the big legacy technology names. I'm talking Microsoft, Amazon, Google, and so on, because they are still making money. You know, the S&P 500 may be losing money now, but the big tech stocks are all profitable. They're just growing earnings at a slower rate than they were a year ago. A year ago, they were at 26% growth. Now they're like 10 to 15. It still makes them buys.
How do you like BABA?
I like BABA, but it's already had a tremendous run. You know, you had two stories there. You had tech and the China recovery and, you know, China trade deal coming up. So long term, we like Alibaba, although a lot of people are not allowed to buy it because it has a very dodgy offshore ownership structure. You're actually, when you buy BABA, you're actually buying a profit stream out of a Cayman Islands company and don't actually have a claim on any mainland China assets like you would with a normal stock.
Sure. You know, in my view, they're pounding the table now on emerging markets like they pounded the table on banks 18 months ago. Now, the emerging market has improved, but it seems to be in a trading range, really, of about 45 and 40. Do you see the emerging markets actually breaking out and delivering some great returns, or is this really...
The U.S. lowers interest rates, the dollar goes down, emerging markets go up. And even though they've had a good move since the beginning of this year, emerging market valuations are less than half the valuations of the U.S. So there's a great valuation argument right there. So if you like copper, oil, palladium, platinum, and silver, you also have to like emerging markets. It's all part of the same trade.
Now, getting over to the other side of the pond before he gets that chart up, what about Europe? You know, they sound like they have all this bad news and this and that, and then Brexit, no Brexit, blah, blah, blah. I see FEZ is the European ETF. And it had gone from 32 to 38, which is a nice run this year. But it does seem to have come back a little bit here, gapped down here in the last few days. Now it's stable. Do you have any feeling on, is it worthwhile to buy into European stocks into all this bad news? Or what do you think?
Well, the European economies are currently rolling over and about to go into recession. And as long as that's the case, I just don't want to go anywhere near Europe. A lot of this is also dependent on Brexit. If Brexit happens, it'll demolish the European economy. By England imploding its own economy. And when your largest customers commit suicide, it's bad for business. And that's essentially what's happening with Brexit and Europe. Until that sorts out, which could be a couple months off, I don't want to touch Europe. That said, if they cancel Brexit, if they have another election and it loses, then you want to go screaming into Europe because it'll be the biggest recovery trade of the year.
It really could be. You know, you follow a lot of the FANG stocks as well. On Netflix, do you see something that it has maybe run its course on the short-term basis, or do you just
we have a technology letter. We have the Mad Hedge technology letter. We cover 200 tech companies on a daily basis. We're in touch with all of these companies. And long-term, we like Netflix. You know, 80% of their growth right now is coming from emerging markets. And although Disney and Apple and Amazon are all trying to get into the Netflix business, the fact is they have a 10-year head start, or even a 20-year head start on the technology on running this business. So, but it'll be volatile, just like all the other tech stocks. You know, as much as we loved Netflix, it fell 40% in the fall meltdown. So you got to trade these things. And here, technical analysis is really more valuable than it is in other sectors because it is such a big factor in the value of the stock.
All right, well, we're coming up to the top of the hour here. Let's go around the horn. And John, just give a brief, anything special you have to offer or how people could get a hold of you to get more information on what you do offer.
Yeah, I'm John Thomas, the Mad Hedge Fund Trader. You can find me at madhedgefundtrader.com. We are global long short macro with a trade alert service and a trade mentoring service. We're up 28% on a year-on-year basis. We're up 34% on a long-term audited average annualized basis. We cover stocks, bonds, commodities, real estate, precious metals, and energy, looking for longs and shorts in all of these at any time. So madhedgefundtrader.com and sign up there for our free research, our Mad Hedge hot tips that come out every day. And I look forward to working with you all.
Great. Thanks a lot, John. And Ben is back with us. And Bennett, very much thank you for putting some charts up there so we could go through some numbers. And again, for the people that are interested in how you can help them with their short-term trading, can you give a little bit of an idea of any specials you might have or how they can contact you to take advantage of your services?
Yeah, my pleasure, Jim. Nice to be on today. Come to traderscoach.com. We deal heavily in risk control and risk management. We also have a suite of software tools that basically is aligning price patterns with momentum for short-term trading as well as long-term trading. But the best thing to do is go to the website, check us out, and we have a lot of videos that explain more precisely how the software tools work. But it's a complete suite, and we have traders now worldwide, over 90 countries. We have several hedge funds using our software, and we're here to help you be the best you can be.
Great. Thanks a lot, Bennett, for being here. Real quick, because we're at the top of the hour, I'm Jim Kinney, and I provide the content to optionprofessor.com. I also do a weekly update, which may even become twice weekly, and you can get the link to that by simply going to optionprofessor.com. Also, if you have a question on anything that I talked about or anything that you might want to ask me a question on, you simply shoot me an email at optionprofessor@gmail.com. David, thanks a lot for having me moderate here today. It went as well as we could do, and back to you, and we'll talk to you soon. Good luck, everybody.
All right. Thanks, guys. Great show. Just a quick reminder to everyone, be sure to subscribe to Timing Research on YouTube and your favorite podcast directory. You can also go to timingresearch.com to get access to this or any of the past reports or show archives. And be sure to join us for episode number 71 of Analyze Your Trade tomorrow, 4:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can always find it at timingresearch.com/live. Larry Gaines, Andrew Keene, and Matt Buckley will be on for that one. And just want to thank my guests again for this episode. Bennett McDowell of TradersCoach.com, John Thomas of MadHedgeFundTrader.com, and Jim Kinney of OptionProfessor.com. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, David.